want to do bad things.
That's real, yo. That's real at all, man. The more money you make, the more problems you get. And jealousy and envy is something that comes with the territory, man. A lot of people, it's just negative energy, like my man Puff said.
What country you from?
What?
What ain't no country I ever heard of? They speak English and what?
What?
English, mother, do you speak it?
Man, you've been doing all this dope producing. You ain't had a chance to show them what time it is.
So what you want me to do?
Welcome to the Spurs Cast, the original San Antonio Spurs podcast.
Welcome to the Spurs Cast, the original San Antonio Spurs podcast. I'm your host, Ryan McCallum. With me, as always, is Mr. Jose Grijalva. Jose, say hello.
Hi. It was like day. I'm kind of tired. This is a pretty early show for us, so
yeah,
I don't think I've ever talked to you this early, have I?
No, I don't know. 3 o'clock in the afternoon. It's 1 o'clock your time, yeah. So it is pretty early, man. This is episode 415. Can you... I thought they would have shut us down. I think we started together maybe like 390 or something. I thought we would be shut down early. Well, this is 415. How has your tenure with me been?
My shoulders are sore from carrying you, carrying Aaron,
dead weight.
Kyle. I mean, I'm that grizzled veteran, right?
Right.
But the good thing is at least I'm kind of in that Michael Finley stage where I'm older. I'm tired, but I kind of look good. You know, I don't look as ugly as I used to. So there's that plus.
I get it. I totally get it. Well, the flip side of that argument is mine. It has been an absolute joy. Thanks for staying with me for that long and not rebelling, because I think that the fans would pick you, not me. So it's much appreciated that Lemmy Ryder shotgun on your show, because that's really what this is, right? This is your show. That's what you always tell people.
It's the people show. Right? I'm here for the people, so it's the people show.
Well, speaking about people, have you seen that Vine that's going around of that the 76er fan just giving Russell Westbrook the double bird and Russell's reaction?
Oh, yeah, and then I think he got escorted out too because you can't do that, especially on live TV. I just didn't get that. That was so random. But, I mean, just to get kicked out for that, then why did you go? Right. I mean, no, he's not going to be like Ken Bone. You remember Ken Bone, right?
Of from course
the
I do.
Presidential Bone debate. Zone. He's not going to be a Ken Bone. So don't try to hog the spotlight in a place where, you know, you're just going to look ridiculous.
Yeah, I
and he
agree.
Doesn't even lift. So,
yeah, he doesn't even lift. Yeah, exactly. He was wearing a Sixers practice jersey or something. At least go legit or get the Chinese jersey. What is it, Jenny Loop? You get any of those jerseys? You know what I'm talking about? Jenny Loop jerseys from China? You ever heard? You know what I'm saying?
No. Is it those cheap ones?
Yeah.
Like the ones that say they're authentic and then
exactly
the logo's a little bit to the left or, you know.
No. They are totally – you would not be able to tell on some of these. I've got a buddy who – does this, not as like a side job reselling them, but he has a lot of jerseys, right? But he never wears them. It's very strange. And he gets them off of that site, and they look authentic, totally authentic. They even have the tags, like the actual tags. You know, say you know, NFL shop, or it'll say NBA store or whatever, right? It's the exact thing. It actually even has the price tag as if it was on the rack inside of a, you know, like Champ Sports or – something like that, right? Or the actual in the arena.
Oh gosh, we need Trump more than ever. Scandalous. Just to get these knockoffs off the street and make America great again. Put those young people to work to make those jerseys here in America.
That's right. Well, we have not so busy of a show. We're going to go pretty quickly, but we couldn't go this week without talking about the beatdown that the Spurs put on the Warriors. It was 129-100 when it all was said and done. Spurs go into Golden State, spoil the fun of the super team, and do it with just an absolute ass kicking that I don't know if anybody really expected. I was counting this as a Warriors win for sure, even if they were still trying to work out their chemistry. Just the firepower on that team, I thought was just going to overwhelm the Spurs, who are frankly still building up their chemistry. I mean, you've got a new centerpiece there with Pau Gasol, literally, no pun intended, right? But they're still trying to work out, their team, their rotations. I thought it was going to be a killing. What did you think that the Warriors were going to win that game going into the game?
Oh yeah, because I thought they were going to I thought the Spurs were just going to play straight up. What really surprised me was they took that mentality of last year of pressuring, and if you notice, they really just pressured Curry. They didn't really pressure Durant. They let Durant go against Kyle Anderson, and whatever comes out of that, it comes out of that.
Right.
Everybody else, they really put that pressure to it. But it was just genius. I did not think they were going to do it. But if you notice the predicament they put Steve Kerr in. Mm-hmm. Last year, if that happened, what do you do if they get in trouble? Well, you can always insert Barbosa. So you can insert Sean Livingston. You can go with that death lineup, whatever. Now, Steve Kerr has his hands tied. Who are you going to take out? You could take out Zaza. Like I said, you could even start that death ball lineup. But, I mean, really, if they go with that pressure, you have no depth to put in two or three guys to really counter it. Now they have to play through that. The one thing that the Spurs did different this year that they didn't do last year, if you remember, it was a shorter rotation.
Yeah.
They probably played like eight guys or so, really with that pressure. Now they went 10, 11 guys. And, I mean, what are the Warriors going to do when they're being pressured continually on both sides of the court because the Spurs really try to answer back as fast as they could? How are they going to play 10, really 5 on 10 in a pressure, in a continual pressure situation? It's just hard to do. I don't think it really speaks to the skill set of the Warriors. I think they're more skilled than the Spurs, but really the depth situation really played a part in it. If the Spurs and any other league keeps doing that, there's no way that the Warriors can survive that. It's just going to be too much pressure.
I totally agree. I thought they were doing some – I mean, and they didn't have Danny Green, right? But I thought that the Spurs, their approach to the game was just absolutely spot on. And I remember you calling this out last year about the pressure that they would put on Curry offensively and defensively and just running him. The whole game, and they did that. They just ran him the whole game. And then what I picked up the same thing that you said about Durant. They were kind of just like letting Durant get whatever he needed to get. I saw they had Tony Parker on him, very Jason Kidd-like from time to time, and just saying, okay, Durant's going to take this, and we're just going to let him get whatever he's going to get, right? And they put Kyle Anderson on him, who can't cover Durant. But they really focused on taking Curry out of the game. And they did. And the other thing that I noticed from just the way that the Warriors are set up is the effect of losing Andrew Bogut, because Zaza cannot it's like, oh my God, Zaza cannot defend, because Kawhi, anybody was getting to the rack anytime that they wanted to, they could get to the hole. And they could not do that last year with Bogut there. And no team could, really. So there are some real insightful things that are happening here with what San Antonio just did to the Warriors. Now, they'll adjust. But wow, that a sign of things to come. I think that it's not surprising that they lost. It's a surprise that they got murdered at home. That's incredible.
And if you saw the Thunder game, we're recording this on Thursday. It was on Wednesday that when the Thunder played, they looked like an entirely different team.
Yeah.
When, like how you mentioned, when the Spurs sort of said, KD wants the ball, it doesn't matter who's on him, just let him try to create whatever he can. They looked like the Thunder. So, watching that game, I couldn't help but think, is Durant really the weak link? Even though skillfully, I mean, he can shoot for being 6'10", but as far as ball movement and, really to get everybody else going, is he the weak link? Because when he had the ball, when Tony Parker on him, they looked like the Thunder. When Kyle Anderson was guarding him at the three-point line, all he did was, to stare him down and then shoot the three. He made it, but they looked like the Thunder. Right. So, if you make Durant the centerpiece and you have Durant try to beat you, that's going to let everybody else go cold. And not only that, it's going to be really hard to ask superstars like Draymond Green, like Klay Thompson, like Steph Curry to, play defense and play defense hard and get tired on defense, but you're not going to touch the ball on offense. Or you're going to have to give it up right away and not, not get a shot off. If you notice the shots that Curry did get off, those were on missed assignments, or I don't know if you remember this, but Pau was on him various times. He did not pressure.
Right.
Pop took him out, chewed him out, because that was not part of the game plan. So you can tell, again, that they don't want these guys to get off. They want Durant to really be the focal point of that. If they fail, man, I just – it's going to be a lot of pressure on Durant because I don't think he can play another way. I don't think he can play off the ball. I don't think he can be, you know, that guy who can set screens off, you know, and try to move like a Danny Green or, you know, or a big man situation like a Thiago Splitter, just set screens and see what happens on the offense. He needs the ball, and he needs to get that shot off. More and more, he's starting to look like Carmelo Anthony to me.
There's, you know what? That's exactly the guy I was going to bring up. He's this in-betweener right now. He's too big and too slow, and I'm saying this, of course, about a guy who's 6'10", 6'11", and is really fast for that size. But he's too slow to really be that off-the-ball guy. And you brought up Danny Green, which I think is perfect, how fast he is on offensive defense and can run and can move. You know, KD can't really do that from that same spot. He has to have the ball and create. And on the flip side of that, he's too small to really defend properly. Right? Do you know what I'm saying? And does that make sense? I mean, he's too thin. He's not strong enough. Like, he can't move himself down onto the block. I just haven't seen that in his game ever, really. And so if they try to make him that guy, I think they're going to fail miserably. Now, this could all just be incredibly overreaction, I'm sure that it is. I mean, the Warriors are going to recover, and they're going to do fine, I think. But I thought it was just really insightful that when the Warriors play an elite team, and I think what's even more important is an elite coach that can pick that out and set a game plan that works just to perfection, that even with that lineup with four all-stars in it, they still can't hang. They still can't hang. And I think, you know, Festus Ezeli not being there hurt too. As crazy as that sounds, I'm with you. I think that they're going to run into depth problems, and I think they're not going to be able to keep anybody out of the rack. Like, I literally cannot wait for the Warriors to play the Kings and have Boogie just destroy Zaza, like hurt him physically.
You brought up the good point where Festus Ezeli. The first thing I thought about, you know, when Kawhi kept getting to the rack was, where was the Durant that supposedly knew how to play defense in the playoffs? You remember? What it was the whole talk. That was the whole talk. You know, now he can play defense. He knows. The first thing I thought was he probably misses Serge Ibaka and Enes Kanter and all those guys. I mean, that makes a big difference. Now he looks like a liability. Again, he looks like a one-dimensional player. Yeah, he took it to the rack a few times when the paint was wide open on Mr. Simons. But other than that, the one thing that surprised me was he didn't even try to take Kyle Anderson off the dribble.
Right.
He just shot over him. You know, that's not going to get it done. I'm going to be with Charles Barkley here, where jump shooting teams cannot win the championship. When the Warriors won the championship, they had the mismatch. They had the small ball. They would cut. You know, they'd take screens, go inside out. You know, I mean, everybody was moving. This team can't do that. So I just don't know where they're going to be. It's going to be a huge disappointment if they don't rack up at least 70 wins. Without a championship, it's going to be a complete disaster. Even if they win it the next year, I mean, this is the year they're supposed to win it because the West really overall is so weak. Everybody's so average with the exception of the Spurs and maybe the Clippers. And we don't know how the Timberwolves are going to look at the end of the season. But, I mean, they should really take it. As far as skill and talent go.
Yeah, I would agree. Now, and speaking about skill and talent, probably the most talented player, he is the most talented player, the two-way threat of Kawhi Leonard. What did you see about Kawhi's game, who just dominated offensively and played a very strong game defensively? What did you see from him that said, man, this guy, if he's not the leading MVP candidate, he's got to be right behind LeBron with one game in. I know this is insane to talk about, but one game in, Kawhi looked incredible, absolutely incredible both ways.
I forget what part of the game it was. I know it was like in the second half, but there was a possession where he had the ball at the top of the key. And he started dribbling, sort of like that cocky little dribble. Mm-hmm. He faked the drive, and he went back, and he shot it just like Kobe. That was a Kobe move, I remember. I forget who was reporting it, that him and Kobe were going to be trading in the offseason. First thing I thought was, that's all Kobe being Bryant. After seeing that, man, whatever I thought about Kawhi offensively, I thought he was going to be sort of on par with what he was doing last season. I thought he was going to be probably more dominant defensively. But, man, the way he has that mentality now, I'm going to just call it the Mamba mentality, where he thinks he can get, you know, a clean shot every time. He can take somebody off the dribble if they're bigger and slower than him. I mean, he can, you know, basically dominate them. I still think he has a post-up game if they choose to guard him with somebody that's weaker or with somebody that's shorter. I think he's going to be the closest thing to LeBron James that we're going to see. I mean, LeBron is still, I think he's the more complete player because he can play the four effectively. I'd like to see Kawhi try to play the four. If he can play the four, it's game over. Because I do not know how you can guard the Spurs if he can play the four offensively and then, you know, defensively also, especially guarding the big guys. He looks lanky, but he's not lanky. You know, this is a conversation I had with Jeff Garcia when, you know, when he would write for Project Spurs. Paul Garcia, you know, when he goes to the games, he looks lanky on TV, but when you see him in person, I mean, the guy looks built from what I've heard. So, if he can really transition to the four in some spot situations, I'll call him, you know, really on that LeBron level. But, I mean, he's going to be looking dominant because this is a guy that plays on both ends of the floor.
Now, a guy who didn't play at all was Danny Green. And the guy who took his spot in those minutes was a dude that was playing with the second team for, you know, and basically a practice squad guy, in my estimation, was Jonathan Simmons. And he was amazing. And it's a very Spursian win, if I can use that as a verb. Because, you know, they're getting points from people they don't expect to get points from. And Jonathan Simmons just, I mean, at times for what he does, looks dominant. And this is the dude that I was telling you when he was in Austin with the Austin Spurs there briefly. I saw him make change on the top of the backboard, I swear. I mean, he's so athletic, and Spurs fans know that from last year. And, you know, but this game, he had the shot. He had the touch. He hit that three-pointer right there, the catch and shoot right there at the end of the half. He looked amazing, and an incredibly strong defensive show from Simmons as well. Do you think Danny Green gets his job back?
You know, the one thing that I'm going to fear is the discussion coming up of is Danny Green expendable now? Can, you know, should he be traded because of how Simmons might be playing? You know, the difference between this Jonathan Simmons and last year Jonathan Simmons, you know, I don't know if he shot like that, but again, the circumstances are different. Last year he was playing with LaMarcus Aldridge and Tim Duncan. And if you remember, Tim Duncan was not the Tim Duncan from before on the offensive end. He couldn't post up. His shot wasn't there. You know, he was really Tiago Splitter a lot of the time, and that didn't open up the paint. Now you have small ball with the Spurs. You have Pau Gasol, who can shoot the ball. He made a three against the Warriors, I believe. Did he make a three? I think he shot one for sure. I forgot if he made one. Aldridge made a three. So, I mean, that really leaves the paint open, and I think that's why he looks so dominant, because now he has the opportunity to really showcase how balanced his offensive game is. That makes it now easier for him to get a clean shot over, you know, somebody playing right in front of his face, because the help's going to be there. And if there's no help in the paint because the offense is spread, I mean, that's just going to lead to opportunities. I don't know about him taking Danny Green's spot. You know, what's that old motto? You don't lose your spot, the job because of injury.
Yeah.
But if he can keep producing like how he produced for the Warriors, I mean, you can make a case that he should take his spot. You know, because again, if he can spot up shoot, that's really what Danny Green does. But again, he can drive the ball. He can defend also. So, and I think the fact that he can really create his own offense is going to benefit the starting unit, you know, if he starts, because of Kyle Anderson started the first game. But I mean, if he were to take a spot, because again, that takes the pressure off of Leonard and LaMarcus Aldridge and Pau Gasol and Tony Parker. You have another guy who can create the shot and guys around him who can spot up shoot. So, I mean, if he keeps progressing like that, I don't know how he can't or why he shouldn't. But if Danny Green comes back and he starts and he has his own role, his old role, and, you know, he has the opportunity to keep his job or lose it, you know, I wouldn't have a problem with that either.
So I know we got to move pretty quickly here to keep this under time. But, you know, I get these lists, and you know I like my lists. So SI's top 100 players came out. We talked a little bit about top 100 and where the Spurs were in the Slam magazine ratings. Here's some new ones, and they're going to be somewhat familiar, but I'll just call out the Spurs that are on the list and kind of where they fit. There's one that I really want to debate you on. Between 98 is Brandon Knight for the Suns, 96 is J.R. Smith for the Cavs, and nestled right there at 97 is Manu Ginobili. At 39 years old, he's the oldest guy on this list. Manu's incredible, right? He was on both lists. We like Manu Ginobili, all those kind of things. The guy who's not on this list, who I would say would kind of be right in that same zone, is Tony Parker. How is Manu on the list and Tony Parker, well, a much younger Tony Parker, not on this list? In the top 100 players in the NBA, that seems a little crazy to me.
We were talking about this earlier, right? And I was still trying to make a case for either or, depending on, you know, I just wanted to be the antagonist on whatever side you pick.
Sure.
But The only thing I can think about on why they listed Manu over Tony is because Manu has that freedom with the second unit. He can be that spot-up shooter. He can be the facilitator, especially now you have Bertens. I don't want to butcher his name. It's not Bertens. It's Bertens, right, around there. You have, I mean, now Jonathan Simmons. So, again, Manu really has the freedom to be whatever really to fit into however the second unit needs him to be. Tony Parker doesn't have that luxury. You know, you have LaMarcus Aldridge who can post up and spot up shoot and, you know, pick and roll, pick and pop. So they really don't need Parker to be that offensive option. Same thing with Pau Gasol. You can really kind of do what Aldridge does. Kawhi Leonard is going to be the guy from that group. So really Parker is the fourth, fifth option if Danny Green's hot or whoever is starting at the shooting guard spot. If they're hot, you know, or if they're managing the offense, now Parker gets bumped down to fifth option. With the second unit, now Manu's the first option, the second option. So, right. And especially against second-tier talent, for the majority of the league, not really, you know, not all the teams really have that sixth man that really can take over the game like a Jamal Crawford. So really, Manu looks better in that role. If you switch them, if you put Manu as the starting point guard, which I think he could play if the Spurs needed him to, you know, maybe it's a different story. Maybe he looks like Tony Parker, but Tony Parker with the bench. Maybe he would look more dominant, you know, especially with the Patty Mills backcourt. So I really don't know why, but I'm guessing that's why. Just because Manu's in a better situation, especially for his age and with more versatile, quicker, more aggressive players than Tony Parker, who really when you start off the game, you're trying to, you know, fill out the defense and fill out the offense on the other side. Second unit really just runs and has fun out there.
So another guy that's on the list at number 69 is Danny Green. I don't really want to talk so much about Danny Green in that spot. It's just that the guy that he's right above seems incredibly misplaced. This is my Eastern Conference, not champion, but competing. In the Eastern Conference title game, New York Knicks, Kristaps Porzingis is at number 68 on the list. Don't you feel like that guy should be way higher than 68? I mean, let me tell you this. The people that are right around him at 67 are Andrew Wiggins. I'd say he's higher. Thaddeus Young at 66. Marvin Williams at 65. Zebo's at 64. And then you go Greg Monroe, 63. It just seems like Porzingis is supposed to be better than all of those guys, right? How is he not a top 50 guy?
You know, in the Slam list, when I was checking it online, and I mean, when it came out like, what, last month, right? So I barely checked it out this past week. And it said that it's based on what they feel their production is going to be. I don't know if SI did it the same way. So basically, they're trying to say, you know, we're saying that they're going to produce, you know, in this ranking. So if that's how they did that, then I would agree with it because you have Derrick Rose, you have Carmelo, you have Courtney Lee, who's really a hustle player who, you know, when he hustles on defense, you have to get him the ball somehow on offense.
Right.
I'm missing somebody. Joakim Noah, he looked horrible, by the way. They should just bench him or cut him or trade him. He's just horrible. But really, they have this squad who, you know, talent-wise, Porzingis is the best player, I think, especially at this point, at his age, at this point of his career, this early. But with all that talent around him, he's not going to have that much of an impact that he should be. That's one of the problems that I had with the going back to that slam list. I think they had Kevin Durant at 3 or 4 and then Kawhi Wright at 4, 5, or 6. I don't remember, but Kawhi was one under him. You know, if they're doing it with production, I mean, there's a lot of things you got to factor in. How's that production going to come about? Is it going to be easy production? Are they going to be the first option? Or are they going to get their points easy because, you know, they're part of a team that's going to allow them to get better looks? You know, with Boogie Cousins, you know, he doesn't have a team around him. So do his 20 points outweigh Durant's 20 points? You know, these lists are so confusing.
Yeah.
I'd like to hear the reasoning why, like how you said, why Porzingis is so low on that list. I would have had him probably top 20 with how he can perform. But again, you know, especially with that offense, they're running this triangle type of thing. You know, it's just confusing. But, you know, I don't blame them for putting him that low if they're just going to go with production.
Well, let me tell you, you called out top 20. I just wanted to call this one out. Number 20 is DeAndre Jordan on the list. Now you tell me Porzingis isn't better than Jordan.
You know, I might get heat for this, but I don't really think that Spurs fans care about DeAndre Jordan. I don't think he should even be in the top 100. He's tall. Yeah. You know, he can
do anything.
He's only as good as his point guard.
That's what I mean. Yeah. So how is he top 20? I just wanted to say that, you know, that name just to give a reference point. That top 20 is this guy. I think this list is bogus, but you know, there's other Spurs in here too. So like Pau Gasol is number 41. That sounds about right to me. And I already said Danny Green, right? And so then you go to LaMarcus Aldridge at number 11, which I agree with that. Let's go, you know, you can see who the top 10 is. Number 10 is Blake Griffin. Number 9 is Paul George. Number 8 is Anthony Davis. 7 is James Harden. This is kind of controversial for me. Number 6 is Kawhi. And then the top 5, I got one argument here, and I want to ask you about it. Number 5 is Russell Westbrook. Sounds good. Number 4 is Chris Paul. You think Chris Paul's a top 4 player? I mean, probably the best true point guard for sure, but top 4 player?
Oh, I'm with you. I don't know how they voted on this. I think it might be because he, like how you said, he's a better point guard than Westbrook, even though Westbrook is more skilled, more athletic than him. So I just don't get it. I would have switched. I mean, I would have put Chris Paul under Kawhi and bumped the other two up.
Yeah, I totally agree with that. And let's go to number 3, Steph Curry. I certainly agree with that. Number 2, though, is Kevin Durant. And number 1 is LeBron, which, you know, okay, I get those, you know, those, that order of those. That being said, Chris Paul, if he moved up, that'd move everybody else up. And I'd say, you know, that makes Kawhi top 5. I mean, Spurs are represented on this list, which is unusual. The other list that I want to talk about is the entertainment rankings. And let me give you a, I'm going to back out. I was going to say, let me just tell you where these teams fall, but try to give me your top 10.
Oh, of, in order, Golden State 1, Cavs 2. I really don't know. What's in the entertainment list? Like what, as far as what fans think are entertaining or ratings wise or.
Yeah, it's like the most watchable.
Oh, I don't know, but I think the Spurs would be like in the 9th or 10th spot.
Yeah, the Spurs. Sorry, I keep running back and forth over here. I'm at home.
You're killing the games with the cardio.
Yeah, that's exactly it. Warriors are number 1. Cavs number 2. So you got those. Clippers number 3. Strange. Trailblazers are number 4. Also strange. Thunder number 5, I get that one. Celtics at number 6, I don't really get that one. 7 is the Houston Rockets. I would have thought they would have been way at the top. Probably number 3. The T-Wolves are number 8, I think just intrigue. And number 9 are the Spurs. Have you ever heard of the Spurs being this high on a list about, you know, entertainment worthy? And why do you think that they're that high?
You know, I don't know. I think it might be the Pau Gasol factor this season because they're ranked on what they think they're going to be exciting, right? So I think it's the Pau Gasol factor, especially with what Gasol can do. We saw him in Chicago. We saw him in L.A. We saw him in Memphis. I mean, he's just a versatile player, and you can run with him. So I think that they were expecting the Spurs to be a running team. First game of the season, they looked pretty darn exciting. The Rockets you mentioned. You know what? Did you watch that Rockets game?
Oh, yeah, absolutely.
Oh, man. I did not. You know what? Kudos to James Harden. I did not think he was going to be that great of a point guard.
Dude, he
looked like Steve Nash out there in some possessions.
He almost had 10 assists in the first half.
And he had 17 assists to close the game, something like that, right?
Yeah, but he was almost, I mean, he almost had 10 in the end of the first. I think he had 8 or 9 at the end of the first half. That's amazing. I mean, there was one, I'm telling you, he threw about a half-court lob to Clint Capella that just looked awesome. He loves Capella. And that was the rumor before the season, like that he was always pushing for Capella to get more minutes and Howard to get less, and I get why. But it's not as if, let me put it this way. It looks like he wanted, he wanted Howard out because Howard was going to command the ball in offense and that kind of thing. And some of that's probably true. But there were so many times off the pick and roll and then just straight called lobs to Capella where Harden's just giving the ball up and letting Capella do his thing. I think he really likes Capella. I think that's a skip. If James Harden's going to be a pass first guy, which or at least it's in his thought process as a close second option, and Capella's as athletic as he is, that's a scary little combo. It's like when Devin Harris and what was that guy's name in Dallas that was doing that? When Devin Harris was there, he was a real skinny dude. It doesn't really matter. There was a guy there in Dallas, and they could not be stopped on that the pick and roll and then the lob. Couldn't be stopped.
It wasn't, well, since you said skinny guy, I don't think it was Dampier, right? It wasn't, oh, man.
It started, the guy with like a B in his name. It's like Brandon or Byron or...
Benga something?
No.
Benga, no?
No.
Oh.
No.
Oh, but James Harden ended with 17 assists. And, I mean, that's what we talked about in the season preview. That's really D'Antoni's offense. There's not a lot of ball movement. So you can – James Harden can get 17 assists because, again, it's really off that – it's off of one pass, and that pass is, should be a great look with how they play offense. The only problem is, you know, he tried to play defense yesterday during that game, and he almost fouled out. I think he had five fouls, right? So – maybe D'Antoni needs to, you know, talk about switches or putting him on somebody that he doesn't have to play defense on. But that was incredible.
Yeah, he's a ridiculously bad defender. Yeah, but I mean, hey, man, Spurs make top 10 in the entertainment rankings. I mean, that I don't know what that translates to into league pass selections, but there are certainly other teams that I would have selected if I wasn't obviously biased that I would have selected ahead of the Spurs on this list. But hey, man, hats off for them. There's some recognition in areas where you didn't think that they would actually be recognized. So
we're entertaining, bro. People are watching now, so that means more people watch the Spurs, more people hear us.
That's right, hear you, because this is your show. That's what you say on Twitter all the time.
You know that's part of my gimmick. I love all my co-hosts.
So what do you think? The Spurs play the Kings tonight. Yeah, Thursday night. So what do you think is going to happen, Boogie versus Powell?
You know, I was really deflated at how Powell played the center position. I don't know. You know, that's not really how he played it before, so I don't know if he's confused or if he's expecting some type of other scheme. One-on-one, I think he'll do a pretty good job against Boogie because, again, they don't have anybody else really to defend. You know, if they try to pick and roll, I mean, I think he could play back. You know, I think he'll do good against him because Boogie can't shoot. Now, unless he starts making those threes that he jacked up last year and they didn't go in, then that's another story. But as far as one-on-one, I think he'll do pretty good.
Yeah, I
was going to say, since you mentioned the center position, I want to give props to Phil Jackson. Phil Jackson, remember when Aldridge was a free agent? He said if Aldridge would play the center position, he'd be the most dominant player, the most dominant big man or the most dominant center in the NBA. He looked that part in the first game when the Spurs went small. So we might even see LaMarcus Aldridge guard Boogie. I think he would do a really good job. I think he had a different outlook on what the center position is supposed to be. But now that he's played it, I think he can be the most dominant guy in the league.
Interesting. So you think he formally moves over there to that spot at some point? Or he just plays he's functionally the center. He takes the best big man regardless on the other team.
I think he'll take the better offensive player at some point, but he'll be more comfortable and he'll look more dominant when they go small. I mean, if you got to go small, I think before that first game, I would have probably said Powell instead of Aldridge because Powell has played that center position. He's a better defender from what we've seen. But again, Aldridge, from what I've seen, I think he could be that dominant guy on both ends of the floor if he puts his mind into it.
So clearly that LaMarcus Aldridge is going to be the guy that's covering Anthony Davis on Saturday, right?
Oh, I think you might just put Powell in there just to, you know, maybe rack up some fouls, put Deadman in there. I don't know about Aldridge, especially since all that offense goes around them. Because it would really depend on the situation. If I was Pop, I would first put Gasol on him and then see what they do on the other end. If Anthony Davis is guarding LaMarcus Aldridge, then I keep Gasol on him because then Anthony Davis has to play both sides of the floor without rest. But if they're guarding one another, then that's trouble waiting to happen, especially with Davis dropping 50 in his first game this season.
Yeah, I was trying to bait you into it, and you didn't take the bait. But, yeah, I would agree with you. I think that you put You put Powell on him somewhat for the reasons what you said. And actually, I think that's really insightful that it, if you put Powell on him and then Davis takes Aldridge, then he's got to hustle both sides of the floor, and Aldridge really doesn't. So, you know, you would assume that Aldridge would be better on his offensive game. I was thinking about putting Powell on him just to say, you're going to get what you get out of Davis. I mean, who cares if he scores another 50 points, right? Because the rest of the team sucks. And you could just kind of give it away. Does that make sense? You know, kind of like what we said they did with Durant, where they just sort of let it happen. And if Durant was going to put up 30 points, then that's okay. But we're going to swarm Curry. I figure that's probably what they would do against Anthony Davis, just kind of let him get his and don't let anybody else get theirs.
I didn't see the first game. Does he back down? You know, from what I remember, Anthony Davis, he was more of a, you know, catch it and just throw it up type of guy. You know, he has a shot. But as far as being a dominant, you know, back down guy, he doesn't seem like that type of guy. Maybe there's possessions where you put a smaller guy on him and see what he can do. And then if you go small ball, yeah, he'll dominate. But, you know, again, it's a 48-minute game, so nobody could really go through playing both sides of the floor like that. Just ask the Warriors.
Yeah, right. There you go. Well, that's it, man. We made it through almost on time, almost 30 minutes, so they're not going to be too mad at us. But thank you very much for joining early afternoon. We will try to put this out there today so people can enjoy the dulcet tones of your voice as they drive home from work today. So, guys, thank you. That was episode 415 of the Spurs Cast, the original San Antonio Spurs podcast, brought to you by ProjectSpurs.com. I'm Ryan McCallum again. You can get me on Twitter at Ryan_MC. You could get Jose at JRG1023. Make sure to give us a follow. Follow at Project Spurs. Follow at the Spurs Cast. Make sure to get over to ProjectSpurs.com. See all the great articles and stuff that the team is putting out there. Jose, thank you. And all you listeners, you are welcome.